And it's a good idea to bring something with you to write. Huh? It's different maybe from other retreats where there is no reading and writing in the meditation hall. So you're very welcome to do that. Because also I'm quite aware that occasionally there is one sentence, one information you don't want to forget. It's something which has a meaning. I've been sitting in thousands of hours, really thousands and thousands of hours of teachings and transmissions. And with all of what we have heard, sometimes there is this one sentence or this one way of seeing things that makes the change, that makes the difference. And so I would like you to be able to note that down. And sometimes when I explain the structure of something, like we started with the six klishas, but we only concentrated on doubts, we didn't have the view yet, remember? So we will certainly continue, and you might want to note that. Things like that. Any other announcements I need to make? For afterwards, before I forget, all my one-on-ones and the groups too with me, they're always in house number 11. So for me, it's always 11, right? That's one thing. And the others, you will say tomorrow. Yeah, good. And for the walking meditation, when we do walking meditation, we do have these other houses with rooms that have air conditioning, so you can even do walking meditation with AC. I don't know if it's a blessing or a curse, but you can. So you can do that. And now we go for a little reset. Can you do that? Can you do your own reset? When the mind has been activated and you decide now is enough, and then just like that, you stop in the middle and you just don't engage anymore. It's just open mind. Let's do that together. Let's do that for a moment. Maybe using the out breath. Yeah? For those who like, this is a little bit easier. With breathing out, letting go of all thinking. No need to comment on anything, just being. This is a capacity to develop, that whenever we have had enough of a certain chain of thoughts, we can just cut the chain. That means we don't involve anymore, we breathe out, or whatever is your support. So we breathe out, and at the same time we open very vast. Our mind becomes vast. It's not a letting go into a darkness. It is opening up into the luminosity of your own mind. And then, depending on how active your mind is right now, perhaps already on the in-breath, some new thoughts arise. Then we can do the same thing again with the next out-breath. Or if your mind is happy to be in that openness, you open, go into that spacious luminosity. And as the in-breath happens, mind stays open. Can I just check with you? Can those who feel that you're able to do it, can you raise the hand? Can you just? How many of you are able to do it? Okay, quite a lot. Yeah, that's, thank you very much for the feedback. It's a highly uncomfortable situation to be teaching without feedback, you know. It's really, so it's nice from time to time. So what we do actually for those who need some more support, at the moment, symbolically breathing out, but you might be the type you want to do it on breathing in, you can also do that. At that moment, we drop all interest in what is going on right now. We drop it together with the out-breath. And of course, there's not a nothing. That is a very, very vivid experience of life after dropping the interest in the discursive mind. But it is not the normal thinking mind. And as you do that, you might feel that, yes, the thinking mind has stopped, so we can do it again and again. But not the feeling mind. You might still feel your mood. Yeah, you might still feel. And you definitely feel. But whatever we feel inside, also, we do not comment on this. Just relaxing, opening up into the simplicity of just being. There is no good and bad in just being the way we are right now. Even if the mood is sad, if the mood is happy, if the mood is tired, if you know, it doesn't matter. It is just this ground of being that begins to shine through as the discursive mind relaxes. So there are many methods to help us with this basic process. What we have done is there was a preoccupation. We were busy with thinking. And then we are not busy anymore. So from grasping, we go to non-grasping. Yeah? From being busy, being hooked onto something, we go to not being hooked. And it is an incredible, incredible feeling to be able to discover that. I probably explained it last retreat as well. Most people, when they hear that we are going from grasping to non-grasping, they feel like they are being asked to, first they are holding on to important things in their life, and when they are asked to go to non-grasping, that what is important in their life will fall from their hands, kind of fall from their mind. So it's like a loss. As if non-grasping were to enter a feeling of loss. But no, the non-grasping is more like love. You see, in love, like loving my children or my parents or my partner, I could be grasping like my fist here, yeah? Like grasping, holding on to something. And then non-grasping is simply opening the fist. It doesn't mean that the child or the partner or the thought or the mood or anything is lost. It is lying in the open hand. Yeah? We drop the grasping. We drop this interest which is too much. But of course, life continues. Of course, our relationship continues. Of course, the topic we have been thinking about is still there in our lives. And then we learn to take care of this topic, this person, this issue, this problem, in a non-grasping way. And in the beginning, it is like we change many times from clinging, the normal way of grasping, identified and so on, and to non-grasping. And again, we find ourselves a little bit tired and we open. So we change, we alternate. But then we begin to see we don't have to close that much anymore. You know, we're closing only a little bit, not so strongly, like experienced people who are not clinging so much in their partnership, or like a mother who has learned not to cling so much to her children, you know, or the father, you know, like, yeah, the hand, so to speak, the grasping mind, the hand stays relaxed, even if it closes a little bit. But it is not taking the freedom away. Yeah, it is allowing for liberty. And this is what we do with our thinking processes, the active processes of mind. Yeah, all the movements in mind, they are called thoughts, but actually they are just movements. Some of them are very strong movements, emotional thoughts. Others, they are very tiny movements. And when we do this with our mind, when we give space, and that's the essential thing we do in meditation, we give space, then the movements are allowed. They can move, like a little bird in our hand can fly. Yes, and what thoughts do when they move is, yes, they arise, but they also disappear. They do what they do. They don't stay. They are not being nourished. We are not fighting with them. There is arising and dissolution. So in order to help that, we do something that we would normally do with a child, or we do it with a dog which has been biting onto my best shirt, and I want to get my shirt. So I want to get my shirt back, but the more I pull on the shirt, the more the dog puts on the shirt as well. So what do? I offer a bone. Ah, much more interesting. Then the dog goes for the bone and drops the shirt, right? So in meditation, we do the same thing. If we don't know how to do that movement of opening up directly, we give us a bone. Which means a simple one, which doesn't cost much, is also vegetarian, you know, it's like... So actually we say, concentrate on something else. Yeah? Like instead of thinking so much, how about staying with breathing in and breathing out? How about staying with physical sensations? How about staying with hearing? How about staying with the visualization, whatever, a light sphere, a light sphere here, or a light sphere in your heart, or how about reciting a mantra, you know, different bones. Yes? So we actually, because we can't do two things at the same time, so we let go of our preferred hopes and fears. Yeah, the preferred thinking, we let go of that, it's being dropped, and we focus on the support in meditation. For the support in meditation to work, the interest we direct towards the support in meditation has to be stronger than our interest in the thinking process or in the emotional process. So the more we are grasping here, the stronger needs to be then the directed interest towards the support. If I'm not very interested in my breathing, I will always be distracted back into my normal preoccupations. That's very clear. So I might take something stronger. I might take to singing instead of breathing. I might sing a beautiful song, and then this, I will sing this with my whole heart. And then, of course, I'm not preoccupied anymore with what was before. But we are clever in clinging. We are really good. We learn how to sing and be thinking at the same time. We are very clever in clinging. Yeah, so it just doesn't work because we have a support that we let go. We must be decided also to not put oil on the fire of our preoccupations. That decision must be there. We must want to stay with the support and meditation. Then it will work. If we are decided, if we are clear about it, okay, now stop. And just to be sure, 100% of my attention goes to the breath. There is then, and if I still use the example of the breath, yes? So then I must breathe with an interest for breathing, which is so strong that it will cut through all other ideas and preoccupations. Yeah? As if I had never been breathing before. And then, when my pull into that direction of the emotional preoccupation, when that pull has become less, I can relax the attention on breathing. It doesn't need to be 100% anymore. Just what is needed in order to stabilize the mind. Yeah. And this is the principle of working with supports in stepping out of our normal, agitated, restless processes, stepping out of identifications. You know, it's very much about stepping out and relaxing. And then the support itself, we can choose supports that have a meaning. We can also focus on flowers, on the stone, we can direct our gaze on the floor, we can. Best support for us is a support that does not generate attachment, nor aversion, and that bears meaning. Meaning means that we like the meaning. For example, if you're very fond of the image of a flower opening, which represents our own mind opening. Then when meditating on a flower and an open flower, here these, they will open soon. Now it's like ourselves. Now there's like little buds, but you can already see them beginning to open. And then you meditate on that old symbol of the Buddhist tradition, the open lotus flower. And then actually, instead of meditating on just the flower, you begin on meditating on the quality of an open heart mind. And that's a little different than meditating on just some red and yellow shades of color, which make up a flower. So in the same way, when we meditate on breathing, breathing is just a very ordinary thing. It happens all the time, since our birth. So all the time we are breathing, nothing special. But we make it into something special, because breathing in is a perfect symbol of opening as we receive. And breathing out is a perfect symbol of allowing something to flow on, to share. Receiving, sharing. Opening up to what comes, allowing everything to flow on. So as we meditate on breathing as a symbol and not only as a physical process, it becomes more meaningful. It teaches us. So the support in meditation can teach us a lot, can teach us so much. The Mahamudra tradition has specialized in these many symbols on which we can meditate. We meditate on Buddhas, male and female. Meditate on male and female Buddhas in union to symbolize the indivisible unity of compassion and wisdom, and so on. You know, can be, and each aspect of the deity symbolizes, for example, the six paramitas, or like the chain, the necklace around is cutting through the 51 mental events, or, you know, like there's so much symbolism there. So you can meditate on the whole of the Dharma just with one mandala visualization. So that's a speciality to work with supports that have meaning. And one needs to be introduced to the meaning. But we can take the simple things of our life and give them the meaning. We can take, for example, a flame, any flame, any light. While we meditate on the light, we meditate at the same time on the luminosity of the mind, on how it is possible to distinguish phenomena. Yeah, it's like outer seeing, inner seeing. How does understanding appear? So the supports in meditation, they can be used in a very intelligent way to actually then support not only mental calm, but also insight processes. This much as a little introduction to working with supports and meditation. And now I will offer, especially for those who are participating in such a retreat for the first time, I will offer you a little guided meditation with the breathing. Yeah, we will do a little Mahamudra Anapanasati. Yes. So, see that you are comfortable. Yes, one more stretching. Oh, the recording wasn't on. But the other one was on. That's good. Imagine 2,500 years ago. We are one of those practitioners who have heard that the Buddha announced, hey, let's get together on the next full moon. And now is this full moon night? In a little village town called Savatthi, Shravasti. And the Buddha makes a guided meditation. And he says, I've taught you so many different methods, but look. Meditation on breathing in and breathing out makes things very easy. Just settle in a convenient place where you're not disturbed. Establish your awareness in front, which probably means direct your gaze in front. And begin to feel the sensations of breathing in and breathing out. When we breathe deeply, we know that we are breathing deeply. When we breathe short in-breaths, short out-breaths, we know the breaths to be shorter. This is the first exercise to be completely aware of the modulations of breathing in and breathing out. How the rhythm of our breath changes, how the depth changes. And to allow for all of that to happen freely. And in case we have a strong thinking activity, we concentrate with more interest. We enhance the focus. Really riding the breath with our mindfulness from the very first moment of the in-breath. The middle of the in-breath, the end of the in-breath, the beginning, middle, and end of the out-breath. And please do it on purpose. Sometimes to breathe more deeply, sometimes to breathe short, just so that you see. Mindfulness does not depend on how you breathe. It follows all the movements. It's like horseback riding. The rider follows all the movements, always in touch with the horse. If you were to go for a long ride with the horse, you would all the time be attentive to every single one of its movements. And that's how you would do a long session of meditation, just following the sensations of breathing in and breathing out. And then, if I explain it from the Mahamudra perspective, we become the breathing. We do not observe the breathing anymore. As we breathe in and breathe out, we become this breathing body. The Buddha says, breathing in, I'm aware of the breathing body. Breathing out, I'm aware of the breathing body. The pranakaya. The body of prana. And in the Mahamudra tradition, we definitely go into the direction of saying this is the whole body breathing. The whole prana body, the subtle energies of the body in the process of breathing. So we begin to include the subtle breath. the breathing of the cells, the breathing of the various organs. Everything that we call body is breathing. And wherever our awareness goes, the prana becomes more alive. There is more to be felt. If we go with our attention into the fingertips, they become so alive. If we go into the soles of the feet, the soles of the feet become so alive. Everywhere the awareness flows, the pranakaya is felt. Being aware of the whole body breathing with great equanimity. Already at this stage, you can include awareness of the changing nature of all these sensations. Flowing on, changing. We might notice how grasping on to certain sensations or disliking them, how that increases the tension. And so we relax even into the unpleasant sensation. We open up into the experience. So we learn about anicca, we learn about dukkha, impermanence and stress, how stress arises, how stress dissolves. And we might already learn about the impersonal process of a breathing body. No center to be found. Practicing in this even-minded awareness allows for the physical formations, the physical experiences to even out, to become more harmonious. As the Buddha says, they are pacified, which means the influence of the kleshas becomes less. Those who wish to continue, continue. And otherwise, we make 15 minutes break for those who want to go to the toilet, walk a little, and then I continue with the teaching. And the most important is the continuity. So, as you sit down, the practice continues, of course. Breathing in, breathing out, the whole body breathing. What I've explained so far are in the Anapanasati Sutta four steps. It's like a package. You can take them home and practice them at home. It's very easy. Sitting down comfortably, if possible, straight. Becoming aware of the breathing. This means you don't have to choose one place like the nostrils or breathing from the chest or the belly. Wherever we feel the sensations of breathing in and breathing out, this is where our awareness goes. And it is very normal that in the beginning it is like mindfulness attaching itself to the breathing experience, like a rider on the horseback. Yeah? It's like, okay, we are riding the waves of breathing in and breathing out. Yeah? And we intimately follow all the movements and we are aware of the undulations, of the changes, sometimes deeper, sometimes more superficial. In these first two steps, the Buddha says, when breathing in long, I'm aware of breathing in long. When breathing out long, I'm aware of breathing out long. When breathing in short, I'm aware of breathing in short. When breathing out short, I'm aware of breathing out short. Very easy to remember, huh? Basically, it means be aware of the changes. Now, you can make it very interesting for you if this is your daily practice by tuning into the uniqueness of the breathing experience. The moment now, how we feel, how we experience the breathing of now, will never repeat itself. Because we are present with a different mindset. The place in which we are changes constantly. The weather, the atmosphere, yeah, the everything that creates this situation of breathing changes. So now is the one moment, is the, if we want to talk of moments, it's the experience of now. So you take it as if you were receiving an ice cream and you know you never get an ice cream again. You know, it's like that. Delicious. And the same on the out-breath, delicious. And don't be afraid, you will get ice cream. But it's this intensity of feeling, yeah? And so you are not just a tired horseback rider, but you are someone who enjoys so much to go with all the movements, yeah, to really be with it. And what we call a moment of distraction is when you almost get thrown off, right? It's like you come back quickly, better. Yeah, it's like you better come back quickly. And you know that you are able to do it for a long time. Don't complain about long times of mindfulness, you know. You know you can do it. You have been driving your car here, and you have been continuously mindful not to get off the road, not to bump into someone. Yeah, you did it. You're aware of it. You're able of it. So don't pretend to yourself that you're doing a big job with 5 minutes of mindfulness. It seems like a big job only because we have not been accustomed to it. But when the mind becomes accustomed to it, it continues and continues and continues. And it's not even exhausting because we do it with the least effort necessary. And this minimum effort is a very important teaching. We don't practice meditation with maximum effort, but always in a very ecological way. Minimum energy. Yeah? Minimum energy used. Just actually, how much energy is necessary, how much mental energy is necessary to stay with the experience of breathing in and breathing out? I tell you, the solution is only as much as is necessary to get away from all your other interests. If you have no other interests, you don't feel that energy is needed because the mind just stays on it. So it's the struggle with the other interests, the other preoccupations in your life. That's the tiresome thing. That's what is so taking so much energy. So please go with the joy. Go with the joy of breathing, because there's no stronger interest than that which creates joy. And the Buddha knew it, because the next instruction, the fifth and the sixth instruction, after saying that breathing in, I experience the whole pranakaya, the whole breathing body. Breathing out, I experience the whole breathing body. That is the third one. The fourth one is breathing in, I experience the calming down of physical formations. Breathing out, I experience the calming of the physical formations. Yeah, we did this. And then the next thing is, he says, breathing in, I experience happiness. Breathing out, I experience happiness. Breathing in, I experience joy. Breathing out, I experience joy. He wants us to take these two factors of sukha and piti, that he wants to take us to take them as the motto for our practice. We can do this right from the beginning. Enjoy what you are doing and start from the very beginning to really enjoy it. Isn't it marvelous not to have to think about anything else? That's great. That's simplicity. I promised you. You know, we will talk about simplicity. We will enter it. Just the simplicity of breathing. Enjoy that simplicity of then feeling the whole body. Now, this is the third step, feeling the whole body, this pranakaya. This is the term in the Pali Canon, in the Sutta. Then it's best that you are not riding on the breath anymore, you're not riding on the body, but that we become the breathing body. Yeah, it is really, it's a shift. It's a shift from mere mindfulness to an awareness that comes from within. And this shift is very, very helpful. It's not a new identification. No one needs to tell us to identify more with this body. We are very identified. It's a shift in not separating a seeming I and self and observer from the experience. That's the shift. So we enter the experience. We would call that becoming one with the horse, right? It's like you don't feel the separation anymore. And I know that some of us with our metal horses called cars, we have become so one with them, we feel them. Every centimeter, we know exactly how far we can go. Yeah, we have become very much one with the outside. Yeah. And so actually this going in more and more, becoming the experience. So we are not actually becoming the body. We're actually becoming all the experiences that life, which is experienced from within as the breathing organism. So that is still less energy needed because we are not maintaining a distance. We're not maintaining the observing distance. We enter the experience and we begin to enjoy it even more. And of course, the physical formations calm down. That's the fourth step. Because we are not separating anymore. And so there is no chance for the kleshas to enter the perception of the physical sensations. Desire needs a distance. I want. Aversion needs a distance. I don't want. Pride needs a distance. This is me. No, we don't create such a distance. We are inside the experience. We become the experience. And by fully being the experience, this living experience of now, we are very much alive. And we are not enhancing dualistic processes. And that's why, although we are so alive, there is an inner peace which comes, a calm, yeah, a quiet within the liveliness. It's a very lively experience. It can be very strong, the experience, when the body is so active, so lively. It can be amazing, yeah, how much this experience comes alive. But the mind simply is one, because anyhow, what we call physical experience is not a physical experience. It's always a mental experience. Okay? So we are simply reducing an illusion. There is no mind observing a body. Whatever we feel as seemingly body is already consciousness. It's happening in consciousness. So very important, we just allow for the most natural thing to happen. And that simplicity gives rise to well-being. Well-being of a more, you can say, attached nature and a more subtle nature, happiness and joy. the well-being becomes more refined. And for those who want to take a simple practice home, go up to here. Yeah, go up to here to this point. And include what I mentioned as we were doing it. Include an awareness of the changing nature of the experience. Include an awareness of how we become tense, like how maybe a pain in the buttocks arises and how suddenly goes off an opening, the pain disappears, you know. The coming and going of dukkha. Yeah, you begin to feel how much suffering depends on our attitude of mind. And you begin to observe also that all of this doesn't need an I, a self, in order to happen, to meditate. The meditator is quite useless. Simply happening. Awareness continuing. We don't need to tell the mind to be aware. That's its nature. We might feel that we need to bring the mind back, but that's only because of these tendencies to always think this is important, that is important, to think of this and to feel about this, to make the comments, you know. So tiresome. So we bring back the mind into this simple being. And actually, already there, this feeling that meditation continues by itself. That's the dawning of anatta, of non-self. It's a dawning of knowing the nature of mind to be active. Because the nature of mind is not distracted. There's nothing in our mind in its deep nature that goes towards distraction. Nothing. An open mind, a free mind, stays in the present, stays in the experience, doesn't run away. So these experiences that I describe to you, they are already deep teachings about the most basic insights. You know, they begin to dawn in us. So that would already be enough to take home with you, if you, and to practice now also in those periods where there's no guided meditation. You can always come back to that. Lying, sitting, standing, moving. Being the whole pranakaya. Opening up to the joy of being aware. And this joy of being aware is part of the nature of mind. It arises in everybody who simplifies. Everybody who steps out of clinging experiences that joy of just being. A little remark for those who have been reading a lot. You know that the Buddhas are often called the Tathagatas, sometimes translated as the thus gone ones. They're gone thus. But Tathata is suchness, is just being so. So having gone into that simplicity of just being so. That's one word for a Buddha. And another word is sugata, having gone into bliss. And this bliss, this joy, is the inherent nature of just being so. They're always connected. They're synonyms. So to walk the path of the Buddha, to walk in the footsteps of those awakened beings, is actually simplifying our experience to open up to the experience of now, and then to always get also into the taste of just how free and happy such a presence is, you know, this presence, that what we call awareness, is always connected to a subtle serenity, subtle joy, happiness, which is the absence of dukkha. The awakened mind is not in dukkha. And that absence of dukkha, we can call that sukha. It is maha sukha, the great joy, the non-dual joy. So Mahamudra takes this direction to emphasize from the very beginning, to emphasize doing our meditation with joy. Ready to do one more? Okay, we go for it. Now you take the lead. Your inner guru takes the lead. You have just heard the teaching. So for the next quarter hour, show yourselves the path.
Thank you.